Five people walk into the same Tesla showroom. One sees the future of transportation. Another sees an overpriced toy. A third sees a political statement. They're all looking at the same company. And every brand health tool on the market gives Tesla a single score as if those five people are seeing the same thing.
Right.
Today, we're covering three things. First, why brands are actually signal sources sending messages on eight different channels, whether they mean to or not. Second, why a single brand score hides almost everything that matters. And third, what happens when you measure brands the way a weather station measures climate, not just temperature, but wind,
Yeah.
humidity, pressure, all at
Yeah,
once.
it's a total paradigm shift.
It really is. Welcome to the deep dive, everyone. We're thrilled to have you with us today. Our mission for this conversation is to completely dismantle how we think about brand measurement. And we're doing that by looking at a massive stack of sources sitting right here on the table.
A literal stack, yeah.
Seriously, it's heavy. We have 20 peer-reviewed research papers hosted on Zenodo, highly technical level one and level two data specs, and these strategic documents that outline a framework called spectral brand theory, which, by the way, does not treat brand perception as some mysterious art form.
No, not at all.
It treats it as a rigorous engineering and physics problem. And to help synthesize all this math and strategy, our resident expert is here with me.
What's fascinating here is that the entire foundation of traditional brand tracking is built on a completely flawed assumption. I mean, standard tools measure a brand as if it were a fixed object.
Like a physical thing.
Exactly. They assume the brand is a statue sitting in the middle of a room, and everyone who walks into that room sees the exact same statue. But spectral brand theory mathematically proves that this is impossible.
Impossible, right.
Yeah, it argues that measuring the object is just the wrong approach entirely. To really understand a brand, we must measure the observer.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand why a single score, out of 100 is failing us, we have to redefine the core subject.
Right.
According to spectral brand theory, a brand is not a logo and it is not a tagline. It is a constant signal emitter. So I want you listening right now to think of a brand like a massive eight-channel audio mixing board.
That's a great way to visualize it.
Traditional brand health trackers look exclusively at the master volume level on the main output. They completely miss the fact that on the actual mixing board, the bass might be blown out, the treble might be totally muted, and the vocals are just echoing everywhere.
And the framework actually maps that mixing board to eight independent perceptual dimensions. Like every operational decision a company makes emits a signal on one or more of these channels.
So, what are the channels?
Well, to understand the physics of this, we need to look at how these eight dimensions operate in the real world. First is the semiotic dimension. This is the sensory identity, the visual logos, the specific Pantone colors, even the auditory chimes a product makes.
Like the Netflix sound.
Exactly. Second is narrative. This goes way beyond advertising. It's the origin myth. It's the story of the founders starting in a garage, you know?
Right. Then you have the ideological dimension, which covers the stated values, ethics, and corporate stances.
Yeah. And the fourth is experiential, which is the actual friction or joy of using the product or dealing with customer service.
The UI, the wait times on hold, all of that.
Yep. Fifth is social, the community you join, and the status you signal to others by just holding that product.
Okay, so that's five.
The sixth dimension is economic, which dictates price positioning and perceived value. Seventh is cultural, measuring how closely the brand aligns with the current zeitgeist and aesthetics.
And the last one.
Finally, the temporal dimension. This is the brand's perceived heritage, its longevity, and its overall relationship with time.
Okay, I want you to picture your favorite company for a second. Visualize that eight-channel mixing board in front of you. Which of those sliders is pushed all the way to the maximum?
Good question.
Like, is the experiential slider maxed out because their software is completely bug-free? Or is the economic slider pushed to the top because they offer unbeatable value? The source material emphasizes that these eight dimensions are mathematically independent.
That is a crucial point.
Yeah, knowing a brand's semiotic score, how recognizable their logo is, tells you absolutely nothing about its economic score or its ideological score.
Right. The independence of those channels is just fundamental. Once a company understands what channels they are broadcasting on, they have to evaluate how they're broadcasting. The Zenodo papers actually categorize signal emission into three types.
Okay, so what's the first one?
Positive emission is the most obvious. It involves active, deliberate output, like a multi-million dollar ad campaign or a huge product redesign.
Just loud, intentional noise.
Exactly. Then, null emission is accidental silence. It happens when a brand neglects a dimension. Like, maybe they possess a really rich history, but fail to ever communicate it on the temporal channel.
They just forget to slide that fader up.
Right. But the third type, structural absence, introduces what the researchers call dark signals.
Dark signals. Hermes makes billions by saying nothing. The silence is the strategy.
Yes, exactly. Structural absence is deliberate restriction that functions as a highly potent signal. The framework likens it to dark matter in astrophysics.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, you cannot observe it directly, but its gravitational pull dictates the movement of everything around it. Think about Hermes. They refuse to sell their core products online.
Right.
They maintain strict geographic scarcity by limiting their boutiques.
Yeah.
They never offer discounts. The empty shelf itself becomes the loudest signal they emit.
By intentionally withholding accessibility on the experiential and economic dimensions, they create this massive amplification effect on their semiotic and social dimensions.
Exactly.
I mean, I have to push back on this concept a little bit, though. Looking at this critically, isn't structural absence just a dressed-up academic term for artificial scarcity? Like, it just feels like playing hard to get. Any new streetwear brand or tech startup can artificially restrict their supply, create some digital waitlist, and refuse to discount. Does doing that automatically turn a company into a luxury powerhouse? It seems like it would just annoy people.
That raises a really important question. And honestly, the math and the source material accounts for that exact skepticism.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The strategy does not work automatically.
Yeah.
The framework introduces a variable called a scarcity multiplier.
The scarcity multiplier. Okay.
For restriction to amplify value rather than just cause frustration, it requires a deeply rooted legitimizing context.
A legitimizing context.
Right. For Hermes, that context lives in their temporal dimension, nearly two centuries of uninterrupted heritage and artisanal craftsmanship. When a consumer encounters a waitlist at Hermes, that temporal heritage translates the delay into a legible message.
Which is?
It says, this object requires immense time and skill to create properly.
Oh, I see. So the waitlist makes logical sense to the observer. If a brand new sneaker company tries the exact same thing, they don't have that temporal heritage to back it up.
Exactly. Without that legitimizing context, the scarcity multiplier drops to zero. The absence doesn't read as a strategic signal of quality. It just reads as arrogance or a broken supply chain.
That distinction completely changes how you look at every limited edition drop out there.
Yeah.
It means we have brands constantly broadcasting on these eight distinct channels, sometimes broadcasting the loudest by choosing to stay entirely silent.
Yep.
But a broadcast implies a receiver, right, who is actually tuning into these frequencies. And why does the exact same signal sound completely different depending on who is standing in the room?
Well, the research answers this by defining observer cohorts. And the documentation is very careful here. It distinguishes a perceptual cohort from a standard marketing demographic.
Yes.
Traditionally, businesses categorize their audience by age, income bracket, or zip code, right? But spectral brand theory demonstrates that demographic data has very little correlation with perceptual reality.
Interesting.
You can take two 35-year-old individuals living in the same neighborhood, earning the exact same salary. Demographically, they occupy the identical segment on a spreadsheet.
But perceptually, they could be living on entirely different planets.
Exactly.
Like one of them might heavily weight the narrative and ideological dimensions. They care deeply about the company's origin story and its ethical footprint. But the other person might apply all their weight to the economic dimension, caring exclusively about getting the lowest possible price.
A segment is who you are. A cohort is what you see.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's apply this to the Tesla example from the source material, and we'll keep it strictly to the mechanics of the framework here.
Good.
The company emits one objective set of physical and digital signals. They build physical cars, they operate a charging network, and the CEO generates a specific amount of ambient noise on social media.
Right.
But because observers apply different weights to different channels, there are at least five structurally distinct brands forming in the minds of the public.
Yeah. Take the tech loyalist cohort. They apply massive weight to the experiential dimension.
So what do they see?
When they look at the brand, the over-the-air software updates and the vehicle's acceleration completely dominate their perception. The ideological signals might be entirely filtered out.
Just completely ignored.
Right. But conversely, look at the boycotter cohort. Mm. They apply almost all of their perceptual weight to the ideological dimension.
Ah.
For them, the CEO's ambient noise online is the loudest signal. It's the point where the physical car barely registers in their assessment of the brand.
This completely shatters the golden rule of marketing. For decades, the industry has preached that brand consistency is the ultimate goal. Like, you have to mean the same thing to everyone.
Yeah, and it's just not true. Spectral brand theory proves that universal consistency is a mathematical myth. The observer acts as an active, unavoidable filter.
So the brand isn't what the corporation writes in a brand book.
No, the brand is the specific, localized combination of signals that survives the journey through an observer's unique filter. The brand simply does not exist independently of the observer.
That is wild.
And realizing this exposes a massive structural flaw in how the global business community measures success. Because different cohorts assemble these signals in vastly different ways, taking all of their unique perceptions and averaging them into a single dashboard metric mathematically destroys reality.
This brings us to the 78 out of 100 problem, which the papers refer to as spectral metamerism. To grasp why a single score is so dangerous, we have to look at where that term actually originates.
Right, in physics.
Yeah, in optical physics and color science, metamerism describes a very specific illusion. You can have two light sources emitting completely different physical wavelengths of light. But because the human eye compresses that infinite dimensional data down into just three color receptors, those two distinct lights can appear to be the exact same color to us. They are physically entirely different, but perceptually identical.
And the papers apply that physical phenomenon directly to corporate data. In spectral brand theory, the raw, uncompressed, eight-dimensional truth of how cohorts perceive a brand is called level one, or L1 data.
L1 data, okay.
When a brand tracking tool takes that complex L1 data and averages it into a single brand health score out of 100, it creates a metameric illusion. The researchers rely on a foundational mathematical theorem called the Johnson-Lindenstrauss lemma to prove this.
Right. The Johnson-Lindenstrauss lemma basically proves that whenever you force high-dimensional data into a lower-dimensional space, you are mathematically required to introduce massive distortion. Think of shining a flashlight on a complex 3D object to cast a shadow on the wall. The shadow is a 2D compression. You can measure the shadow, but you have lost all the depth and volume of the actual object. Every brand score you have ever seen is a lossy compression of something richer.
The L1 data is completely annihilated in that compression. You can have two completely different companies that both score 78 out of 100 on an executive's tracking report.
And the CEO sees that 78, sees the competitor's 78, and naturally assumes they're fighting the exact same battle.
But the architecture beneath that 78 is totally different. Hermes might score a 78 because they have towering mountain-like peaks in their temporal and semiotic dimensions, combined with a massive valley in economic accessibility.
Right.
IKEA might also score a 78, but they get there through dominant economic and experiential signals with much lower temporal heritage.
Ah, so they look the same on paper, but they're built entirely differently.
Exactly. Hermes possesses what the research defines as ecosystem coherence. Their extreme differences across dimensions actually reinforce each other to build a resilient structure.
Okay, and IKEA?
IKEA possesses signal coherence. Their output is uniformly consistent across the board. The single compressed score of 78 blinds the executive to how these companies will react under pressure.
Oh, that makes sense.
If a massive global economic disruption occurs, Hermes can selectively shed peripheral observers while its core ecosystem remains untouched. IKEA, because its structure is so uniform, will transmit that economic shock equally across all its cohorts.
So the single score completely hides which company is structurally resilient and which is uniformly fragile.
Exactly.
I really want you to visualize this. Imagine a radar chart with 8 axes. You plot Tesla, and the shape spikes out to 7.5 on the semiotic axis, but plunges all the way down to 3.0 on the ideological axis. Then imagine 5 different colored overlays on that exact same chart, showing how 5 different cohorts perceive completely different shapes from that exact same brand.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it brings us right back to the weather station analogy. A weather station doesn't just average the temperature, the humidity, and the barometric pressure into one single weather score of 78.
Right, because what would that even mean?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If it did, you would have absolutely no idea whether you should put on a light jacket or board up your windows for a Category 5 hurricane.
Yeah.
You need the full 8-dimensional pressure, wind, and temperature readings to understand the climate.
Flattening it all into an average destroys the architecture of the reality you're trying to navigate.
Yep.
So what does this all mean? Why should you, as a listener, care about the Johnson-Lindenstrauss lemma or eight-channel signal emission.
Wow.
Because whether you're deciding which product to buy, analyzing a stock for your investment portfolio, or trying to manage a team's reputation within a company, you now have the ultimate X-ray machine. You no longer have to settle for the compressed shadow on the wall. You can look at the full spectral profile of the world around you.
But before we close the books on these Zenodo papers, there is one final, highly sobering concept hidden in the mathematical proofs that fundamentally changes how we view reputation management.
Okay, what is it?
The framework models brand perception using non-ergodic dynamics.
Wait, non-ergodic. Let's break down what non-ergodic actually means in this context, because the implications here are pretty heavy.
Sure. In an ergodic system, things eventually return to a baseline average over time. If you roll a pair of dice enough times, you will eventually hit every combination, and you can calculate the average outcome.
It bounces back.
Right. But a non-ergodic system contains states that you cannot recover from. Think of dropping a glass on a tile floor.
It shatters.
Exactly. The glass doesn't return to its baseline state. It's fundamentally altered. In spectral brand theory, observer perception moves along a trajectory. The boundary of that trajectory is what mathematicians define as an absorbing state.
So if a cohort's perception of a specific dimension drops low enough, it hits that boundary.
Yes. If an observer's conviction in the specific dimension, say, a cohort entirely loses trust in a brand's ideological dimension, after a major corporate scandal drops to mathematical zero, it enters that absorbing state.
And then what?
The math proves that once it crosses that threshold, it is permanently gone. No amount of new marketing, no perfectly executed apology tour, and no rebranding campaign can ever restore that dimension for that specific cohort.
The signal doesn't just get weak. It effectively ceases to exist.
The observer's perceptual vocabulary for that company permanently loses that dimension. They become completely blind to any future signals broadcast on that channel.
Wow.
It is a rigorous mathematical proof of a very human reality.
Mm.
Some trust, once broken, can never be repaired.
It is a profound reminder that actions have permanent architectural consequences. If you manage a brand, listen to episode 2 next. It's designed for brand strategists. If you're curious about the math, episode 21 explains why positioning maps are already geometry and how to extend them.